as I said earlier, when you first came in, I am so grateful that you made the effort to come out on a cold and rainy winter morning. There's every reason not to. And yet, given all the reasons not to still go forward is distinguishing, and I think important in every aspect of human life. The mind always has a reason not to. The will, or in some cases, the discipline, or in some cases, simply the power of being motivates and transcends the mind and all of its reasons not to. It's sort of what we look for in this practice. How does one dig into that which inspires us to go beyond ourselves, to go beyond our comfort, to go beyond our ease, to go beyond the known, the familiar, the thing that keeps us in a place of contentment and isolation. Finding that in yourself is in many ways what this work is about. How do I go beyond myself? How do I go beyond my ego-minded self-centeredness? What can I do? And I will tell you, life will present you endless opportunities to do so. How many of them do you take? How many of them are you willing to stand up to and go, I can do this? And it's not a once in a while thing, really. It ultimately becomes a state of being, that which is always working to transcend itself, to go beyond its limitations, to go beyond its comfort, to move forward. And life will not remain comfortable, as you all know. It's very changeable. It brings you ease and it brings you discomfort. The trick is not to only be joyful and available when it's easy, and the trick is also not to just be the winter soldier who's only there when it's hard. Find the balance. Always be conscious and available to your inner spaciousness, knowing presence. This is what the training is for. And it really is training. It does not happen of itself. What happens of itself is inertia. What happens by itself is the search for pleasure. What happens by itself is seduced, being seduced by ease, by the familiar, by the known. This means moving into the unknown, the unfamiliar, the not always pleasurable. Moving against the grain. Doing that will allow you to grow. Now, if that's all ego-driven and the mind is taking credit for it, it won't have much value. You'll just build up a thing about how powerful you are, how strong you are, how determined you are, and you'll just have another identity. But if you find this thing comes from deep inside and breaks you apart, opens you up over and over and over, rather than identify with it, you will find yourself beholden to it or grateful to it, and know that it is working you for its greater self, not for yours. And when you start to connect to its greatness, you get an inclination that you are part of that greatness. But if you in any way hold on to that idea, it'll just break that down inside you at some point. Because we are all here for something beyond who we think we are. Our journey is important, it's personal, it is directed, we have things to do, but they are all part of the program. Yes, you have to complete the thing you were given, whatever that is. And you kind of know it or you don't know it. But it has something to do with waking up in the morning. It has something to do with what do you do after you wake up in the morning and how do you do it? What is your attitude toward doing it? Do you brush your teeth with resentment? Or do you look out the window and look how beautiful it is and brush your teeth and feel the vibration on your teeth and feel the vitality of a new day and the freshness that's coming into your mouth? How do you proceed? And then what follows that? Many of us have obligatory things to do. Go to work, get the gas for the car, make breakfast for the kids. Whatever it is, you have your agenda. How do you do that agenda? Is it just by rote? Gotta do this, gotta do that, gotta do that. Is it with anger? Or is it with a kind of simple, aware pleasure that you are serving something bigger than you? And if it is not that, if you are not aware of that, it is because you are lost in ego-minded self. And that is the entrapment of almost every person on the planet. We do the drudgery of day-to-day life without ever understanding the magnitude of what this is, with our minds so narrowly focused that we don't breathe in the possibility of existence. We don't open to our true nature, which is to be awed by the day-to-day newness of things. Once you find yourself locked into the repetitive, this is how it is, da, 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 you're in a tomb, you're buried, you're already dead. Life is awakening to the unknown, the unexpected, the obviously recreated existence of being. I say recreated because it looks like it's something from before. It looks recreated, but it is really being created. Recreated, which is also recreated, means we get to enjoy it. Recreation, recreation. Day by day by day, this thing happens over and over and over. And if you can open to its newness, its unfamiliarity, its unpredictability, if you can just say yes to that, the day fills up with this light of whatever it is that's making it happen in the first place. How is this happening? If you don't ask that question, you just go about going, oh God, another day. If you ask the question, how is this happening? The mystery appears. If the mystery appears, you look at it from a different angle. You go, it's not the same old. It's like, everything becomes part of the mystery. Everything, every little element of life need not have happened. It need not have happened in the way it happened, even if it's somewhat familiar. It happened in its own particular moment of time and space, and it involved this thing we call you. If you begin to appreciate the mystery and go into the heart of it, you become a force of expression of that mystery. By appreciating it, you begin to give yourself over to it. And as you give yourself over to it, it expresses itself through you in whatever form you want it to do, in how you treat the people around you, and how you make art, and how you set the table, and how you read the newspaper. You give yourself over to the explosion of, the unfolding of, the arrival of the newness of life. And for so many people, it's just drudgery. Oh, God. And I see it all the time. And I see people getting stuck all the time, stuck in all different levels. You can get stuck under the mud. You can get stuck sitting, hanging in the tree. You know, there's so many levels of staying in the same place. Life does not stay in the same place. It sometimes moves in enormous slow motion, but it is not static. Human beings become static until they're moved by their decomposition of their body, or their mind gets bored, or whatever it happens that causes some of the kind of an engineer a transformational moment. But what's really wanted is something bigger, which is the transformative continuum, where you are always in reaction to, responsive to, or at the best of versions, one with the change that's happening. If you are in reaction to it, there will be a reactor. And that reactor will go, I like this, I don't like that. This is fun, that's not fun. And you will have an involvement with life, but it will be very much a you and an it. And it will have good days and bad days and ups and downs and all of the stuff that formulates a normal life. If you can begin to slowly eradicate the reactor being and just go, thy will be done, or just go, yes, or just be quiet, you will begin to feel that there is nobody reacting to the world other than this memory of a being that you named your name. And that as you stop reacting, something remarkable happens. The you that is reacting relaxes out of play, disappears temporarily or maybe permanently, and there's just the thing happening. When there's nobody to react, there's nothing that can be labeled good or bad, happy, sad. It's just this enormous awareness. And it's an enormous awareness of the happy, sad, good, bad, love, hate, beauty, and ugliness that are all part of the whole. But when there's nobody going, this is beautiful, this is ugly, I like this part, I don't like that part, what happens is you begin to feel the absolute totality of your true being. What happens when you come to this class, or even when you just sit privately by yourself, you begin to wind down the reactive part of your being, and you start to find your way into this feeling space that has depths of feeling that you never even were aware were possible. And you go into that space, and it, I've always said, just opens and embraces you. It takes you in, it makes you comfortable, it tells you it loves you. All those things are true. But then it starts to give you work to do, purpose. It basically says, okay, take this, share it. Take this, emanate it. Take this, be it. In the world. Be this thing in the world. It will be challenging because the world will come at you in many different ways, not always appreciating this quality of feeling and empathy and emanation of kindness and goodness and love that you start to represent. And you may get slammed for it or reacted to in funny ways. And if you take it personally, you're going to have to come back here and we're going to have to work that out. We're going to have to help get rid of that reactor part because that's limiting this capacity of this enormous oceanic presence to be given as a gift to the world. Once you start to go, I don't like that, I don't like that, you become less available, less of a servant, if you will, less of a manifester or emanation of this beauty and truth and love. And so what you need to do is practice repeatedly being available and non-reactive to the things that, the slings and arrows, as Shakespeare put it, of outrageous fortune. You have to let that stuff lift off. And the only way to grow in it is to deal with harder and more difficult things that will be thrown at you. or will rise up inside you. That's the test of a spiritual life, the evolutionary value, the Darwinian part of this spiritual journey we're on. Things will come at you that are big, and perhaps bigger than you want to deal with. And they will be things that encourage fear, lack of faith, lack of trust. How am I going to get through the next day? Where's the next meal going to come from? What's going to happen when I retire? How am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? All of that voicing starts to erode the simple moment-to-moment reality of well-being, protectedness, love, oceanic you that is looking out for every part of your being. Again, when there's nothing reacting, you have what's called liberation. Freedom from you. Freedom from the part of you that is so tiresome to live with. Who wants it? Well, we're conditioned to want it. We're conditioned to live it. We're conditioned to hold on to it. And that's really a problem. So what is deconditioning? Well, it's a practice. For example, if you don't work out a day in your life and you eat a lot of bad stuff and you live according to your pleasures, there will be consequence to that. And they will do damage to you in many ways, physically, emotionally, intellectually. You will find yourself corroded by your lack of effort to support something greater than your ego being. If something stimulates you to begin this journey, whatever that may be, some form of suffering, some awakening, something that says, I can't go on like this, I've got to change it, I've got to do something, then there, you know, you've got 12-step programs, you've got all these different places you can go to help engineer that. One of those places you can go is here. Here. Sit down in yourself, relax, go inside, and discover that the very structure of support you need to change, to grow, to become non-reactive to the desires and pleasures and fears of life is already foundationally built into you. And if you go there in a practice, in a disciplined practice, you will gain the power of that internal force to live in a very disciplined, practiced, loving, gentle way and have a remarkable life. But it will be challenged regularly. And I will tell you why it's challenged. Because the ultimate knowing of who you are is so massive and absolute and requires such total and complete surrender that only those who are willing to give it everything can have it or know it. Because then you can become a true servant of the truth. You can be a partial servant of it, but it will be working you. It will be working you to break that down. It will be working you to destroy the thing that stands in its way. And what stands in its way is your illusion of who you are. That stands in its way. And ultimately, it breaks it down and destroys it, at least in a bodily sense. If you believe in Buddhist reincarnation and the journey of the soul, it's a bigger journey than just the loss of the body, because one imagines perhaps that one goes into death still holding on to the thing that was, still holding on to the belief of what could be, still locked into a kind of mental construct that makes you feel that you are in some way something other than what is. And until that breaks it down, and if it takes 5 million lifetimes, again, I don't know how that works. But if it takes that long, it's worth it. On the other hand, you can do it now. You can do it right now. All you have to do is show up to everything that manifests and acknowledge it as best you can with as little reaction to it as possible, or at least with the knowledge that this reactor part of you is showing itself to you so it can be let go of, surrendered. That's the journey. My experience, 50 years in, is stuff is still coming at me, the reactor part, but the stuff that's coming in as the reactor is surprising. It's just, didn't know that was there. Funny little things, like, again, expecting the world to go a certain way and then discovering it doesn't. Interesting, past week, my son Josh called me from the hospital where they believed he was having a heart attack. He's not even 50. And I thought, my son can't have a heart attack. That's not how it works. That's not how life works. I'm the one who has to have a heart attack. He's supposed to be fine. He's young. And the idea of suddenly my son not being there, and what would happen with his children, and the craziness of we moved here to be with them, and now suddenly he might not be here. All these thoughts and things started coming, and these reactions of enormous disturbance and sadness and projection and fear and hope, this magnitude of stuff. It turns out that he probably did not have a heart attack, that he had symptoms of that, but they were not that. He's gone through tests and is going through more tests, but I was not prepared for that information. And shocked at how much I would have to surrender in ways that I hadn't known to this unfolding of life as we know it. And it would not be on my terms. And I didn't realize how much my terms were still at play. And what do I do to let go of that? I didn't know. I just knew I had to drive over to his house and give him a hug. And then he and I started talking about it, and Elijah was sitting there drawing, and he was listening to us talk about this. He said, and he got up and he started to leave the room like, what are you talking about? I don't want to hear all this stuff. I'm too young to hear this stuff. And it was like so unbelievably sweet, because he wanted to hug us too, but he also wanted to run away from this truth. And he didn't know what to do with it. And he finally, the three of us just sat there hugging. And it was like so beautiful, because one way or another, we have to accept these dynamic alterations in our expectations, in our pleasure zone, in our ease of being. We have to go beyond that. And I didn't know that kind of muscle would even exist in me. I don't know if it does exist in me, but I realized, wow, that's a big one. That's a big one not to react to. And I don't think they're telling me not to react emotionally and humanly and in real terms, but they are asking me to let it be. Let the reality of that emotion come up. Let this thing emerge. Let this thing pass through you. Non-reaction doesn't mean you don't have a reaction. It means you don't hold the reaction. You don't try to turn it into an internal drama that drives your life. It's just something that happens. If I had to lose my son, the power of that would come up daily, probably. And I would have to acknowledge and live with its deep resonance. Suffering is a deep resonance. Most people I know who suffer in life have the word depth attached. They go deeply, because it's not a superficial thing. It is deep and real. And the gift of real suffering is depth, because it deepens you into the source. And it's a way the source comes through. The broken heart lets the light through. It's that idea. It It's a horrible way to get there, but we may at times be asked to do that. I spent the week watching the impeachment hearings. It's a really interesting experience on so many levels. One, it's great when you're on the treadmill because you really walk fast and you don't even think about walking. You're just listening to this stuff and you're seeing this thing called truth, or what appears to be truth on one side, and dark, evil deception on the other side, if in fact I'm judging it properly. But that really feels like good and evil right in front of you, and you are watching them together playing out. You are watching the corruption of truth and the expression of truth. And the truth seems to express itself with great simplicity and gentility and ease and power and courage. And the non-truth is a corrupted form of truth that parades as truth. It looks like truth, but you feel in your gut this is not true. This is self-serving, it's ego-minded, it's power-based, it's give me, I want me, egotistically me, to have something. And you see these two forces working simultaneously on the same platform, and you realize the drama of good and evil is always playing out in front of you. Always, every day. You don't always see it. We have a wonderful person working for us who came over and was working here. And I talked a little bit about watching the impeachment. And he said, I don't think they should be doing impeachment. They're spending all that money. They shouldn't be spending that money. And I had a very big reaction because I felt this was a very important thing to be happening. This person said, what is it about anyway? What are they impeaching for? And I went, oh. He has no idea what is going on. He is totally out of touch. We got a little bit into a discussion of all that matters is, in a way, the journey to heaven. Because this man was very religious. And that everything else is temporary. And so I thought about that and I went, why am I so caught up in the journey of the dark side and the light side, good and bad, good and evil, and he's just totally letting it all go. I'm not sure I can answer this question because maybe he picked the right path, but I took it as the path of knowing as opposed to the path of unknowing. And in the practice that I teach and the practice that I work with, knowing seems to become more valuable, even if it brings up stuff, than not knowing. And I suspect that not knowing, the level of ignorant mind, does not change the environmental truth of your life and ultimately will close in on you. That which you don't know still will connect. But the knowing doesn't change it. What you do know may also close in on you and connect. So is it better to have your head in the sand and just die that way? Or is it better to see the coming at you and going, I don't propose the answer to that. I mean, I can tell you personally, I've chosen the eyes open approach as best I can. The eyes open approach presents you with something troubling, which is a metaphorical feeling that a strange disease, a kind of cancer, is arising in the body politic and in the environmental world that we live in, the environmental world of sun, moon, stars, earth, trees, life, and the environmental world of the political universe that we inhabit, the sociological, cultural world. Something diseased is going on. And that, in a sense, I feel like a cell in the body of the universe. And I feel like a healthy cell who's become aware that there are unhealthy cells that are living outside the truth, that they are cancerous cells trying to serve their own private function for pleasure, for power, for wealth, for whatever it is that they're looking for, but they do not think of or care about the larger body politic, and they have become a cancer. The thing about cancer, which is so interesting, is it kills the very body that supports it. It's madness. It's a kind of madness. When that occurs, the good cells, healthy cells, have to begin to fight strongly against that cancer. You're not allowed to sit still and pretend that cancer is not there, because that cancer will erode you. It will destroy you. It will take over. I believe that's looking at how cancers tend to work. They tend to invade bad cells, weak cells, cells that are not paying attention. The strong cell has an enormous requirement in a decomposing body or a body that's unhealthy to become more healthy, to stand their ground. And that right now, in our culture, in our history, we are being asked to become stronger cells and to help spread the health of our well-being to others, to do battle, if you will, with the cancerous cells. I don't know if we will win. I will tell you, the journey into health seems to me to be more, if you will, rewarding than the journey into cancerous demise. So I would support all of us working hard to become more full expressions of the healthy cellular being that I believe we are. But this is a moment in time where that choice is no longer modest, well, maybe, okay, I think I could do something kind of choice. It's like life or death choice for us, for each other, for the planet. So we're in a very big moment. And I don't like using the metaphor of cancer, and I don't like using the metaphor of life and death and all of those things in the body politic or in the environmental scheme of things. On the other hand, I don't think I can disavow any of it. And I think I need to bring it up. And I probably will be bringing it up, even though I think most people have another 10 or 15 years before this thing really starts to create the kind of internal panic, perhaps, that it will probably evoke. I think if you're living in Venice right now, it's already happened. If you're living in fire zones in California, it's already happened. There are people for whom this awakening is starting to take place, but waking in panic is not the best answer. Waking in health, in compassion, in caring, in promoting the wealth and the health and the good, the goodness of being is what we're here for. And that this little tiny class that we have every Sunday is a tiny little emblematic statement of we want to be healthy, supportive, and able to share our strength and our goodness and our awareness with those around us in whatever capacity we can. So this whole talk comes down to, this is not just fun and games, oh, I'm going to be enlightened, oh, I'm going to reach nirvana, or whatever it is your mind tends to think about you're going to get. This is about working away the you so that the truth of your being can bring the power of love, truth, beauty, and if you will, health to the body politic, to the world we live in. This is an important moment. This is not fun and games. This is not the world we lived in the 1980s and the 1990s and the 2000s. This is, we're in an important time. And I know when I talk like this, there will be many people who go, no more, enough, I don't want to hear this. That's fine. But I'm being told to talk about it, and I am. I do this completely out of love, completely out of care. The idea of scaring and panicking people is not the goal. It's work hard, sit still, be open, find your truth, express it as openly and lovingly as you can to everyone around you. That is probably the most, and in a way, the best you can do. You cannot save the world, or you may not be, not most of us are not programmed to save the world, but we are programmed to become that which is the essence of salvation, which is open-hearted, loving, empathetic, compassionate human beings. So, take this all in. I only want it to motivate one thing. Find your center. Find yourself. Let it erode the ego-dominated stuff of your life, and let it help you begin to or further involve this living from the core of your goodness and your joy and your love and your strength and your capacity to be the best version of you imaginable. That's all I am saying. It is hard, but if you want reinforcement and you want help and friendship in the journey, come here. We will offer it every week. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you, guys.